that's more or less why we wanted to set up this Early Starters program, is because I don't know about the rest of Australia and worldwide, but certainly here in Perth, there aren't really many professionally oriented early childhood, that's 2 to 4 years old, music programs. They are often run in childcare centres and, you know, it might be, like Steve said, drop-in sessions.
You're listening to the Integrated Music Teaching Podcast from Top Music. Tune in weekly as we interview music teachers and experts from around the world to explore creative activities and ideas that build learning connections in students. Our integrated music teaching approach will deepen your students' understanding of musical concepts, engage them in critical thinking, improve their reading and performance, foster their curiosity, and prepare them for a lifetime of music making. Tim Topham here, and welcome back to the Integrated Music Teaching Podcast. During our group teaching focus time at the moment, thanks for spending some time with me listening today. I really do appreciate it, and I hope you enjoy the show today. If you're new to the show and wondering what IMT, Integrated Music Teaching, is all about, then just head over to topmusic.co/integrated, where you can learn more about the research-informed background to this learning model that any teacher can implement in 3 easy steps. And over there, you can download a 1-page reference sheet as well, so you can test it all out today. We just love guiding and helping teachers as much as we possibly can with pedagogy and business skills. So great to be spending time with you today talking about group teaching, and particularly early years group teaching, which is our focus today. Now, before we get on to today's show, I wanted to share another podcast review with you from Amanda McMullen from the United States. And Amanda said to us, "You guys, I seriously cannot rave about Tim Topham enough. I'm a voice teacher, but have recently started teaching beginner piano lessons as well. I honestly had no idea where to begin with teaching piano, but Tim Topham's podcast and Top Music Pro membership have completely set me up and gotten me off to the right start. Because of his amazing tips, advice, resources, and online lesson plans, I feel 100% more confident, prepared, and excited about teaching piano. Not only that, but his ideas have inspired me to be more creative. I think every piano teacher needs to know about this amazing person and his work." Oh, thank you. Well, thank you, Tim, she says. "I'm thanking you, Amanda, for your hard work and dedication that is making the lives of so many music educators more exciting, fulfilling, and creative." Oh, thanks, Amanda. That's such a lovely tribute. And it's just amazing to hear feedback like that. I'm kind of gobsmacked actually reading it. I don't pre-read these, so I didn't know what was actually coming. So, Amanda, make sure you reach out to Jill on our support team at support@topmusic.co if you're listening to this, so we can provide you a small thank you gift for providing a review. And if you would like to share a review and possibly have it read out on the show and to receive a small gift from us, then it would be amazing to have you head to topmusic.co/iTunes, which is where the instructions are for leaving a review. If you're not too sure how to do it, that's where you'll find it all out. It only literally takes as long as it takes to write a few sentences. So let's say 3 to 5 minutes. And it really does help us get found by more teachers and really does support our mission of bringing and helping bring as much music as possible to the world. Our show notes for today's episode are all over at topmusic.co/episode number 324. So my two guests today, firstly, we have Stephen Armstrong. Stephen is a multi-award-winning former lecturer of musicology with degrees in performance and educational leadership and over 20 years piano teaching experience. He left academia in 2018 to start Advantage Music Academy, which has become a profitable and well-loved brick-and-mortar music school over in Perth, Western Australia. Stephen leads a team of 11 teachers who see 300 students weekly. The academy's success has led to an official industry partnership with the tertiary sector. And our other guest today, Brock Stannard-Brown. Brock is an experienced teacher in one-to-one and group context with degrees in composition and teaching. He's a full-time piano teacher and early years specialist at Advantage Music Academy with Stephen. He is in high demand as a piano teacher and has expanded the early years programs at the academy with incredible success, growing one program by over 300% in less than 1 year after assuming the role of the academy's early years coordinator. It's exactly what we're going to be talking about today. Welcome to the show, Steve and Brock. Great to have you with me today.
Thanks for having us on.
So, Steve, you've been part of my A-List coaching program for a couple of months now, and you're the founder of Advantage Music Academy over in Perth, Western Australia. And Brock, you're one of the teachers on Steve's team and the co-creator of the program that we're going to be talking about, or the two programs we're going to be talking about today. So it's great to get you both together at the same time, because I've spent a lot of time with Steve, but not so much time with you, Brock. So it's great to finally meet you. So firstly, Steve, can you tell us a bit about the Advantage Music Academy that you've built over there in Perth?
Yeah. Well, before I started at 2018, term one, I was an academic at UWA, and I was lecturing musicology, so-called music theory, and working on a PhD. And I really love music, obviously, and research, but what I really love was teaching. And to put it delicately, universities are not really places for people who are passionate about teaching. So I abandoned all of that and started the academy to do what I really, really loved. And since then, I've done some postgrad qualifications in educational leadership, and currently working through, because I'm a sucker for punishment, so I'm currently working through the Masters of Teaching primary school at the moment as well. Education is obviously mine.
And did you start with one room in your house teaching one student? Because I know you're now multi-teacher commercial location. How did that progression happen?
Sort of. I was doing the mobile thing. So I'd be at the university all week. Yeah. And then I would just go through to the local area and spend all day, Saturday and Sunday, doing that. It was one of those things that it's always been a really wonderful thing to do. And then it just suddenly happened. And then you're doing it before you realize it, And suddenly you're signing a commercial lease, just wondering, like, what the hell am I doing? But so I was doing the mobile thing. So those all but two students came to the academy. So it was 19 students. And one other teacher came on board with just an hour to start with. They happened to do that. And then now there's 11 teachers and over 300 students.
Fantastic. What amazing growth. And you started as so many, because I think a lot of teachers see teachers like yourself or hear of them with 500 students, 1,000 students, whatever it is, 300 for you. And they think, oh, I could never get there. Knowing that you started traveling to students' houses as a university student on the weekends and have got to where you are now just shows that anyone can do it. A lot of perseverance, a lot of hard work.
Oh, yeah, that's right. So you've got to be prepared to do 60-hour weeks, Well, I mean, you what you get out of it is what you put in it, And sorry, it's a distraction, but
Bronson's just climbed up on the piano behind me.
it's really quite rewarding to think that, when first started it, there were six rooms, now we have seven. There were six and five of them were empty, every day of the week. And now I get kicked out of my own office because I have to make room for another teacher. So that's great, get the afternoon off.
Also, if I can just butt in, the strange thing about business growth is it's quite exponential. I mean, I've been here for 2 years, and even in my time, I've seen it just exponentially grow. I think that's quite a fun thing to see, when you run a business is, it's really difficult, I'm sure, to get that first foot in the door. But as you grow your following, then it gets bigger and bigger. And now, we have to turn people away sometimes because we just don't have the spaces.
Yeah. Well, congratulations on what you've built. I think you should be very, very proud of your efforts. Together, because I know you've worked together a lot in the last few years, Brock, and I'd like to turn to those programs that you've been working on because I think they're going to be of a lot of interest to our teachers, particularly as we've been focusing a lot on group teaching in the last few weeks. So you've got two programs that you have developed. One's called Early Starters, and this is for ages 2 to 4, and then you've got something called Head Start Piano, which is for ages 4 to 7. And a lot of teachers listening are probably going, oh, my goodness, how could I ever teach a 2-year-old? 8 is about the youngest I do. I'd put my hand up and say 12 is about the youngest I do these days. I really like the sort of teenage and adult market. I mean, everyone's different, of course. But I'm interested to know, why did you decide to build programs for such young students, especially given that there are some other programs out there already?
Well, firstly, it's good business, right? We want to make money. Let's not be shy about that. We're not a non-profit, so we've got to make money.
And making money by expanding the total addressable market down in age group, right? That's what you're talking about.
Right, absolutely. Yeah. And I wanted to offer something that was, really rich in pedagogical value, because firstly, In Perth, at least, there's not many options available, and I don't think the public sort of see it as educationally valuable, just more of a leisure activity, bouncing a mum's knee, waving scarves around, and, dropping classes and so on. And secondly, I wanted to create something that will prepare young children for instrumental lessons in a very targeted way, but not in a way that's targeted to our own curriculum, because a lot of methods are very narrow in that each level that you go through prepares them for the next one within that system. And I wanted to create something that simply gave young children a solid musical foundation that would benefit them no matter what direction they take after that. I also wanted to create something that was far-sighted, and we know what is required at this end of to be an effective learner and musician, and that informs what we do at this end. And we're in no hurry, so we always keep the big picture in mind, and we pick our battles. Building things like, good technique, whatever that really means, is not a priority for us with four-year-olds. It'll come. There's plenty of time, and our goal is really to get kids engaged for the long haul and set them up for success. And the children that have stayed on from early starters going into Head Start lessons at 4 years of age already know how to read basic rhythmic notation, already know a lot of great music, have already experimented and improvised, and have already developed a sense of understanding of beat and pitch, and have already developed basic keyboard orientation skills. And then going from Head Start to just call it general piano lessons, so about the age of 7 or 8, the child is musically already quite highly literate and for their age, and they know how to think about music and they know how to learn music. So there's certainly a connection between our two programs, but both are complete within themselves and can stand alone. And Head Start Piano is actually designed for kids without any musical experience. It obviously just helps if you've done early starters before that. And finally, in reference to your comment about there being other programs, there are a lot of resources available for teachers, for teaching preschoolers, but most of it's gamification for its own sake. For example, like here's 10, and there's nothing inherently wrong with this, but here's 10 fun activities you can do with a 5-year-old. But I wanted to create something that was fun for little kids, but was very purpose driven. And so the learning activities in our programs are highly intentional, being linked to specific learning outcomes and being linked to a curriculum of the instrument and so on.
Yeah, one of the things I've learned about you, Steve, over the time that we've been working together is you have a really strong and solid grasp of pedagogy. You kind of love it. You relish in it. Learning outcomes first and foremost. You're not just, as you say, you're not just creating a curriculum to make 5-year-olds have some fun around music. It is super structured, and that goes right through into your Advantage Music Academy, which I think is incredible and a really important point to bring out. The other thing I just want to highlight is that you said some of those skills, you were talking about 4-year-olds here, sense of understanding of rhythm, can sing in tune probably. I can't remember what they all were, but I just want to highlight to our audience, we're talking about 4- and 5-year-olds here. We, of course, as a lot of music teachers, will pick up students at 8 or 9 who have no ability in any of those areas. So, I mean, already my brain's going, well, this makes perfect sense.
Yeah, absolutely. I think if I can butt in, that's more or less why we wanted to set up this Early Starters program, is because I don't know about the rest of Australia and worldwide, but certainly here in Perth, there aren't really many professionally oriented early childhood, that's 2 to 4 years old, music programs. They are often run in childcare centres and, it might be, like Steve said, drop-in sessions. And essentially you're losing, I would say, the best 2 or 3 years where you can really get a lot of that core music fundamentals down with these young kids. You're losing out on that because it's often seen as, like a nursery rhyme kind of thing. And that is also quite fun. But the gap that we saw in the market was something which prepares students later on for further music education and eventually to go into instruments.
Yeah, far-sightedness. Yeah.
Yes.
And do you think your regular music teacher, if they're open to teaching younger students, could manage this with a set curriculum? Like we're going to unpack a little bit more about what you do, but does it take, it obviously takes someone who loves young children, but is there anything mind-blowingly special required by teachers, or can anyone
Any good teacher do this, do you think?
I reckon most people could do it. Both Steve and I started, I certainly didn't really have much early childhood specialty when I first started. But you learn, yeah, and that's with all teaching, isn't it? You learn what works, what doesn't work. But yeah, I think with our curriculum, certainly it's a lot more structured. So we have that already built in. I think as long as you can have fun with the kids, so you can get on their level and you know what the ultimate learning outcomes are, then yeah, I think absolutely most people can certainly do that.
Even getting on the level with kids, I never thought I would be particularly, you know, coming from, you know, the lecture theatre with 18-year-olds, I didn't think I would feel that great with 4-year-olds. And it probably wasn't at first, you know, but I'm obviously very motivated, so you just get good at it. Now I love it. And, you know, and the same for Brock, you know, Brock kind of transitioned. He was observing me doing the classes and I watched him grow from, you know, kind of a hesitant.
Very unsure.
Hesitancy, just being not silly enough and things like that, you know.
I should say I'm also an only child, so I had absolutely no experience with younger kids at all. And so it's a lot that I was learning from Steve. And yeah, it probably took maybe half a year or something. But now, yeah, once you do it long enough, you do feel quite comfortable.
So that can be learned as well. And then the curriculum, you know, there's videos, there's explanations, there's, you know, like videos of actual activities. You know, so you can see exactly what to do.
I think seeing the teaching in action, because I've seen some of the videos you've produced, and they're so engaging. Brock, I can't believe you haven't had like 20 years of primary school training.
Thank you. That's very kind of you.
You are so natural with these little kids. And so that's a real treat.
Well, it's because I'm a big kid, Tim, essentially. I'm just a big kid.
Well, you do.
I'm more or less like a 24-year-old toddler.
You have a lot of fun in those lessons. So, yeah. So what are some of the main points of difference between your program and other ones? Obviously we're all familiar with Kodai and Suzuki and Music Garten and Kinder Music, and like there's lots of them out there. What was the main sort of points of difference you wanted to bring out with your programs?
Well, to be honest, I don't actually pay a whole lot of attention to what other programs are doing. I just focus on what I believe is right, as I think we all do. But what I believe is right is what is kind of what the education research is telling us is effective. But what I have observed is that most programs are either more or less for entertainment purposes, are built on what I would call pseudoscience, you know, like sort of an idea. And it might sound like I've got something against Suzuki, but, you know, it was based on this idea about, you know, how you learn a language, and which, is, you know, I'm sure there's some truth to it, but it's also not, you know, he wasn't an expert in early childhood literacy development, phonetics and so on. So I'm not saying it's wrong, but, you know, there are lots of nice ideas out there and lots of programs that children enjoy, and there are lots of programs that achieve results, but we have to, or what we do is ask, you know, what is, when we say, oh, that's a really good program because of look what it achieves, by what sort of measurement, by what standard. And if I, you know, again, looking at Suzuki, you might say the early years program is really effective because in the end you've got a teenager who is, you know, really, really good at violin, but I would say they're really good Suzuki students, right? And
there's a lot of question around the performance level of Suzuki students being incredibly high and well refined, but their reading being lacking because it's left until much later on. There's also, you know, challenges with parental involvement, needing the parents kind of become teachers. This is I've only got a very basic understanding of it too. But there, you know, that's a couple of examples, I guess.
Can I just butt in there? I think that actually comes to a point which we've talked about a lot, is what the focus is. I think a lot of programs will teach the instrument, not music. What our program is focused on is teaching music. So our students become musically literate. And so it may mean sometimes some parents, of course, in a Suzuki, again, I'm not against Suzuki,
we're not bagging Suzuki here. Just
sorry. To
insert name of other programs.
A lot of programs, they'll teach things which may look really impressive, and that's wonderful. And I think it is really good if a student can play really, you know, amazing stuff and really fast. But the core behind that may be lacking. We're taking that more ground up approach, where we're trying to teach music as a language. We're trying to teach the students how to become musically literate, and then you can learn an instrument on top of that. We actually had something just recently that we were thinking about. Some of our younger students were playing with just one finger on the piano. Now, of course, you know, a lot of parents would look at that, and a lot of teachers would say, oh, that's not very good technique. And we were thinking, you know, oh, is this really the best thing for them to be playing with one finger? But when you think about it, it is actually better, because I'm sure so many piano teachers will have this problem. You say to a student, what note is that? Number one. They say number one because they're thinking fingers. It's like a numerical approach, not the actual note. So sometimes what may appear like in those sort of programs more outwardly impressive is actually a little bit hollow because they don't have that core understanding beneath it.
Mm. Yeah, there's two things, I guess, that are really coming out in our discussion already. One is this ground-up approach. And two, you've said earlier, far-sightedness. I don't know if everyone heard that. You said, you know, you're not just looking for quick wins now, lots of fun and games. It's more, where is this actually getting kids in the longer term, and how are we leading them there? And I think that's obviously critical if we want to spend our time productively. And it's a missing step for a lot of teachers because it's not something that a lot of us are trained to do. So I think that's a great way to look at things. Can we talk about some of the learning outcomes in a more general sense of where you want to try and get these kids?
Sure. So with our Early Starters program, it's really just the basic foundations of music, how to keep a beat, how to sing in tune, and how to have, you know, a positive relationship with singing. That's something you can only really get from a group. That's quite difficult, especially for younger students in a one-on-one setting. It's quite intense. We want them to be as much as we can musically literate in that foundational way. Of course, you know, there's a whole bunch of developmental benefits, you know, in terms of hand-eye coordination and the gross and fine motor skills and all that kind of stuff. It supports, you know, all of their development, really. We have actually, with this program, tied it to the EYLF, which is here in Australia. I'm not sure if there's equivalent things over, you know, in other countries. But it's that kind of overall developmental thing that we were hoping to go with. And essentially with that program, we want to make the kids enjoy music and prepare them for when they do go into further music lessons, which would be for us our Head Start program. And in that program, that's where they're really fleshing out their musical literacy. They're learning a lot more terminology. We take an oral approach at the start, but then they do learn to read music notation. But with all of those programs, they're learning music through the piano.
Yep, it sounds great. Well, I'm really keen to dive in a little bit more to give people who are listening a picture of what these lessons actually look like. So let's start with the early starters. You've got a room full of 2 to 4-year-olds. Sounds like chaos to me. So how do the sessions work? Are the parents there? How many kids? Are they all doing the same thing together? Are they sitting at keyboards on their own? Which I know is not the case. Tell us more.
So with our early starters, we usually have between 5 and 6 kids in a class. We have 6 as our maximum, and I think that's probably the best teacher to student interaction. Otherwise, you know, with larger programs, you just can't get that individual focus with the kids. All the kids do everything together. At that age, it's fairly gradual progression. So we can bring them along together. At that age, sometimes there will be some older students who might, you know, take the lead and the younger ones will follow, but they are all doing everything together. The parents sit in, and I do ask them for the first at least 2 terms to do everything with the kids, because that really puts them at ease, and it's a really good model.
But scares the pants off some of them, having to move around and dance and be crazy.
Well, it depends on the kid. You know, there are some kids that are really quite shy.
I'm talking about the parents joining in.
Oh, the parents. Actually, you know what? You're quite right. The parents. It's even like a yoga class for some of them, because we're up and down and moving and running and all that kind of stuff. And they learn a lot of things as well. I think that's quite a compliment that I've received, is when the parents say, I've never heard of that before. They're learning as well as their kids.
That's great.
It's funny hearing, you know, which parents can hold a tune or not.
Oh, yeah.
You know, some of them could just naturally hold pitch, but other ones, it's just absolutely awful.
Yeah. And I think it's quite nice when you see the parents and the children both developing that really positive relationship with music and with learning. Because, yeah, you do see those parents at the start, they can be quite uptight. And, you know, a term or two later, they're doing all of our different things, the walk and stop and running and all that kind of stuff. And they really enjoy it as well. Some I still need to get a little bit more on board, usually the fathers, but I won't say anything. It's really fun. But we do eventually want the parents to be able to leave their kids. That's that kind of independent model that we're going with. So after maybe 3-4 terms, usually the kids are quite comfortable in that group class environment. You know, the parents will go have a coffee, do the shopping, whatever. And so I have them on their own.
And that's actually a part of the design. So they're told that it's in the terms and conditions of enrollment and it's on the website, you know, that's the expectation that parents will gradually withdraw from the class. And, you know, we once had this little boy, Jack, right, he was 2, and he refused to participate. He would stay by the door with his mum and then turn by turn, you'd shuffle a little bit closer to where the group was. And it took terms. And then it got to the point where she would just drop him off and go get a coffee, you know, which is just really amazing to see. Yeah. And now he does, you know, Head Start piano.
And that would have had an impact on him outside of music as well, I'm sure, that growing confidence and independence. Yeah.
Did you know that there's a conference especially for group piano teachers? It's called Group Illuminated, and it's an on-demand conference that will run through June and July this year, 2023. Group Illuminated is the go-to place to take your questions about group piano and come away with answers, new ideas, empowerment, and inspiration. Visit groupilluminated.com to learn more and to register for this fabulous on-demand conference. Use coupon code TIM50 for a $50 discount on the conference ticket.
And is there a requirement for them to do anything at home? I won't call it practice, but to play or sing or listen?
For early starters? No, we don't have any expectation really. But of course, we do encourage it. And lots of parents will buy their kids glockenspiels and toy pianos and percussion and all that kind of stuff. And I think at that age, actually, you don't really need to force them to do anything because, you know, we'll hear stories of kids singing songs that we do in the shower, on the toilet, that kind of stuff. Yeah. You know, they really do, it becomes kind of part of their daily routine. So without us having to, you know, request them to do anything, they will do stuff that we do at class at home.
A lot of parents say, you know, the kid might not be particularly engaged in the class, but they always do the stuff at home.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
And in some ways that's better, you know.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's better.
Right, so then take us up to the Head Start. So we're talking now 4 to 6-year-olds. Are we still doing groups of 6 with parents here or is this like quite different now?
Well, the Head Start program can be done in either one-to-one format or in group. It works well either way. But it's for 4 to 7-year-olds. But yeah, so we can do it in either way, a group or individual format. It's still really activity based, but it's slightly more piano focused because it's Head Start piano. We want to give them that head start to later on what we might call traditional instrumental lessons. But yeah, they do a whole bunch of activities, rhythm activities and singing and, you know, those kind of movement activities, all that sort of stuff. But it's just slightly more targeted at the piano. They learn initially orally. So our first module in Head Start is all an oral approach. They'll listen by ear. We do things with boom whackers and, you know, glockenspiels and all that kind of stuff. And then we transfer it to the piano. And luckily in that sort of setting where, you know, there's maybe 5 notes that they're playing, you can have 4 or 5 kids at the piano all playing at the same time. So, yeah, it'll work for either situation, individual or group.
And you've also created these great activity books, which Steve's told me about, which the kids really love using too as an adjunct. Well, probably as a core part of it. How does that work in? Because they don't go and sit at a desk and do their theory book as such. It's part of an integrated
It's integrated in the course. Yeah, it's part of the curriculum. We always tie whatever the activity or the piece, the repertoire piece that we're doing to a certain page in the activity book. We actually created our own because I don't know if you found the same, but when you are teaching younger students, so many of the activity books or that dreaded word theory books, they all take different approaches, and you find that you're drawing from a whole bunch of different books and a whole bunch of different resources. It's really taxing. We wanted it to tie exactly to our curriculum, and we wanted to have exactly what we wanted in the progressive order that we're doing, and things which tie to the activities, not just, you know, we're doing some activities and then randomly in some theory book that the kid doesn't want to do, there's a tar. We actually have activities based on the activities that we do in class.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So
even the graphics are up some of the... Sorry.
Yeah, so they're not suddenly drawing a treble clef when that's had no relevance to anything they've done in their class or, you know, that kind
exactly.
of more connections.
Yeah. Everything that we do in our lessons is always tied to, some further ahead concept. So we'll always introduce something before we're going to play it at the piano.
Yeah. Yes, great. Yeah, so you're preparing them for that step that's coming, maybe coming next week or the week after.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah. Fantastic. Well, look, I think I could probably answer this question myself, but what are some of those advantages that you've seen for younger students? They're graduating from Head Start. They're now 8, 9, 10, coming into actual piano lessons one-on-one with your other teachers, maybe Steve at the Academy. What are some of the differences that you see?
I think they've developed a really solid core foundation in musicality. So they, like we said before, they can keep a beat, they can sing in tune. I know that sounds quite simple, but the problem is in instrumental lessons, you don't want to have to be dealing with that when you're past 5, 6, 7 years old. That's all the stuff that you get early on. And I would say that they have a really good relationship with the teacher and with the school as well. They have a really positive relationship with music itself and with music lessons. They've just been exposed to a very wide variety of different types of music. They see it as something that they can have some ownership as well, because we always encourage improvisation and all that sort of thing. So I think generally we would say that they're a lot more confident in their musicianship, and they have a much more positive and long-lasting approach to music.
Can I just add that, you know, unless we've got too much pride, you know, we'd all have to admit that we've had those students that, you know, lesson after lesson after lesson, it's just all about note reading. You know, there's the kid who just really struggles with it, and you just, that feels like all the lessons are about. You know, he's got a song, a little piece in your primer book, C, B, and A, C, D, and E, and it's just this half hour of like trying to get them. You know, they go C, D, it goes back to C, then they play a different note, and you're just, you know, rattling your brain like you just played the note, you know. So this is just, I think if we can remove those obstacles early on, then, you know, we're going to have higher gains later.
Yeah, and I think for those teachers listening who, and I've been one of these teachers who, you know, always bemoan the fact that their students won't sing, or, you know, they stress about doing oral tests before an exam because they just, it's just not something that students have been exposed to, or they play 3-4 and drop a beat, so it's like 4-4 without knowing what they're doing, and they can't get the, like, all of these things. These are the musical concepts and standard skills that we can build into them younger if we're able to start them younger. And even if we do start them, I have my notebook beginner approach for beginner lessons, just to get them singing and chanting and tapping and rhythm and pulse and meter and listening to harmony and things like that. These are just so critical in those first lessons. Reading, just, it can just wait, it can come a little bit later. So I'm so glad that you guys are aligned with that, because it's just so important. So you guys are actually, and I want to ask Brock a couple of sort of tips to round off our discussion today, because I know teachers listening may be like, oh, Boomwhackers, what are they, or whatever else. Anyway, but before that, you're planning to actually release this Head Start program in the next few months for other teachers to explore. And it's been really cool, Steve, because I've been able to share some of the videos of Brock teaching and some of your resources with some of the teachers that we work with at Top Music. And the feedback has been just phenomenal. Like, they love it, and the response from the kids have been great. So congratulations on that for you guys. How will this actually look for teachers? Because there may be teachers listening who are like, oh, actually, I reckon I could give this a bit of a shot. What's the program going to look like, and how's it going to work?
Yeah, so obviously it'll be accessible online. The activity books themselves will be hopefully available in print, physical copies, and but definitely digital. And it's going to be a lot of supplementary materials as well. So, you know, in the book, there'll be a particular activity around, say, tar and zar. And then you can download other similar questions, you know, around the same thing, because, you know, once you've done the page in the book, then what? You know, that's, you know, there's got to be a lot more reinforcement. And there's videos of all of the activities, so they can see exactly how it works. And as all the activities have an increasing challenge, so, you know, you repeat the activity again and again over several weeks, but there's something added to it. And so, you know, you see all of that in the video, and there's also, you know, you call it a teacher's handbook, which, you know, outlines basically the same thing, but watching the videos is, I think, much more engaging and a lot easier to see it. Like, what does it actually look like?
And these are videos of teaching in action, right?
Yeah.
It's so super critical, because teachers love seeing things in action. Other teachers teaching, I can't get enough of it. I think it's just the best way to learn. Well, I've always enjoyed masterclasses. So teachers will be able to get the activity books that their students can use, handbook that they can use, and a pack of videos, like access to videos that they can see. Here's what happens in module one. Here's what you need to do. Learning objectives. Here's how it looks in the class, right?
Yep. I should add the activity books themselves are, it's a lot of coloring, tracing, and stickers, and or, you know, if you get the digital version, then it's cut and paste. So, yeah, kids, you know, they love that stuff.
Got to love the stickers, yeah. I still have some stickers in the books that my teacher taught me with.
Yeah.
And stamps.
Real life
stamps. She also paid me money, which is a bit weird back then. I'm still playing piano, so
trip to it.
Something worked.
Yeah, I got bribed with it, like, for finishing my theory book. My teacher would take me to Adventure World, which, for those who don't know, is like a aqua park, a fun park, you know. Yeah.
I know Adventure World very well. And I think as part of today, you're going to be giving away some activities that teachers can actually try for free, right? So where do they go for this?
Yeah, so the website, advantagemusicacademy.com/teaching. Their /teaching is important, otherwise you will just be at our music school website. And from there, you know, if you just sign up for the email, you'll get an email sent out that will have PDF, and it will have the links to the videos as well.
Fantastic. So that's advantagemusicacademy.com/teaching. Go there completely free. Like, if you're teaching young kids or are interested in it, just go and grab these, go and download them, have some fun with them, try them out yourself, and see if they could be something that you could integrate into your own lessons. So as a bit of a wrap up, Brock, can you give us a few tips for working with this preschool age students to get the most out of learning?
Sure. Tim, I was just going to say, let's get to a real, you know, marketing tactic there, and just, you know, the first five callers, so the first five
subscribers, okay, hot off the press. Go. What's happening?
Brock's gonna just give them a one-on-one video call support, just a one-off, you know, so they get the activity they want to kind of really, because you want teachers to really know what they're doing with this activity, because it's gonna be the first time probably. And you want it to be, it was not going to be their best time because it's the first, but we want it to be as good as it can possibly be. So just as an extra bonus, Brock's just going to give them that video support.
Fantastic. All right. Thank you. That's awesome. So first five people to download that activity pack at advantagemusicacademy.com/teaching, get five, get a one-on-one with you, Brock. That's super cool.
Thank you.
All right. Let's go through those tips if you've got some to share.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much you could say. There's some things that come to mind, I would say. With young kids, that age group, it's really good if you can relate what you're doing to sort of real world or tangible experiences that they can imagine. It's quite difficult for them to imagine things in the abstract, like adults can do quite reasonably and quite easily. So, you know, often a lot of methods would say, you know, kind of make up a little story. We don't go that far, but we do want to relate it to something that a student could imagine. For example, I don't know if you know, there's a Kabalevsky piece, Porcupine Dance, and it's all staccato. And so that's what you're teaching. And they'll often play it legato at the start, and I'll say, well, imagine you've got a pet porcupine. Well, actually, some editions call it hedgehog, but it's all the same. And I'd say, imagine if you had a pet porcupine here, you were stroking it or patting it, you know, would it be how would it feel? Obviously, they'll always say it's really spiky. So you say, well, yeah, so you don't want to keep your fingers down on top of it. It's going to be pulling away from it. And that's all you need. You don't need to make a big song and dance about it. But just those kind of things which a student can reference to and understand in their own language. And that's something that they can take home. They'll know, oh, okay, spiky. But if you say, you have to play it staccato, which means short and detached, they're going to be like, well, I don't even know what detached means, you know. So that kind of thing is valuable. I would say in the lesson, you want to move quite quickly and quite regularly from activity to activity in different areas in the classroom. When I'm teaching, we'll go from the piano down to the ground with boom whackers and glockenspiel, and then we'll do some activity book stuff. We'll do work on the board. It's always more or less tied to the central concept, which I'm trying to get to in that lesson. But, you know, I'm sure everyone knows if you've had kids or if you've taught young kids that, you know, it's really quite difficult to capture and hold their attention. So just keep things moving as regularly as possible. I would say what we often say in our staff training is just pick your battles and know the bigger picture. When you're teaching younger kids, there are probably, if they're playing something on the piano, there might be 5-6 things that, as a teacher. And if you're a little bit OCD like I am, you want to, you know, correct all of those different things all at the same time. But of course, you know, they're little minds. They can't really hold all of that in. And it can actually be quite demotivating if you're saying, okay, we need to change this and this needs to be a certain way and all that kind of stuff. So we prefer to repeat things across multiple lessons. We don't go super, super in depth for each activity within the one lesson, but they're going across multiple lessons. And each lesson, you're just adding one extra thing, fairly straightforward, that they can add in. And that's far more motivating and much more educationally valuable for kids of that age. And I'd say probably the other thing that I would say, and I know it sounds quite mundane, but just have fun with the kids. You know, be fun, make jokes, be silly, get on their level. And that means not only in terms of, you know, having fun and being silly and all that kind of stuff, but actually get physically on their level. I think there's nothing worse than seeing early childhood teachers that sit on this big chair above, you know, towering above all these kids. It's a leveling thing. And I think it just doesn't really inspire the kids. I'm always down on the ground doing stuff with kids. We're making a whole bunch of jokes. You know, like I said before, I'm a big kid and I think they really like that. But you also have to know through your body language and through your vocal tone how to make it clear when it's time to focus, you know, because that's another thing with kids. They'll try and push the boundaries as much as they can, as long as they know that they can have fun. But you also have that authority where you can say, okay, now I need to be serious for a few minutes. Then, yeah, they'll be your best friends.
In the kids, you know, like if they get upset with you, like, so what? I think a lot of young teachers in particular are afraid of upsetting a kid. I'm not saying we should go out of our way to upset them, but you know, because you just don't know how they're going to react when you give them a kind of stern word or something. But you know, they'll forget next week they're your friend. You know, it's big, again, big picture.
I think the pick battles, I mean, that's a lesson for all ages. I think a lot of teachers, myself included, try to pack too much into a lesson, try to pick up too many things, and don't reinforce them enough the following week as well, and the following week after that, and the one after that. And I was always, you know, that was one of my, the things I struggled with most, because I was constantly coming up with so many new ideas. Some of my students just eventually said, Tim, I can't deal with, I can't deal with this. Like, there's too many things going on. And I learned, you know, I learned lessons the hard way that way. So I think that's a great lesson to take away for all ages. And I think you've mentioned some of those tools that you like using. I think, you know, glockenspiels, or, you know, things on the floor that involve large body movements, obviously great for this age group. Boom whackers, so much fun. I never used them when I was a kid, but I've seen you in your videos using them, and they look really fun. Any other ones that come to mind?
So I would say that kind of thing. I mean, we use a whole bunch of percussion, you know, egg shakers, tapping sticks, or what it's probably called, claves. We'll use a whole bunch of different things, big bongo drums and stuff like that. Another really valuable one, actually, if you can invest in it, especially for the 2 to 4 year old range, is a little toy piano. It's just an octave range, and it's usually like colored big keys. So that's kind of good because they don't have that fine motor skill yet. Then that's a really good intermediate step from going from, if we're doing boom whackers or glockenspiel, then you do it on the toy piano because it's really just the white notes of the piano. They're all coloured. And then you would go to the piano. That I've found has been such a benefit. And you can easily, in a group situation, each kid gets, you know, 20 seconds or something with the toy piano, and then eventually you'll go onto the piano.
Also, the animal cards are a big hit.
Yeah, yeah. So we've this is actually part of what we're releasing is we've made and we use a whole bunch of different resources. So we've got animal cards and colour cards, which we use for our activities. We do a little animal wrap where the kids lay out animals on the ground and they have to say the animal names against a wrap backing, which is really quite cute. And then, yeah, we've got rhythm cards and, you know, all sorts of things. So we're definitely well stocked.
Yeah. And all of that, you don't as a teacher, you don't have to freak out and worry about creating all of that. It's all done. It's a great thing.
Yes.
About yep. If you want to try teaching this age group, grab some of these resources because it's all been done for you by people who have the vision, who have the skill, the pedagogical background, and know those learning outcomes. So, all right. Well, look, last quick question. What kind of teachers do you reckon this is going to suit?
I think probably teachers who don't work with that age group because they find it intimidating. Some people find little kids intimidating. And then others who are maybe working with them but don't really, you know, they're kind of, we see it all the time in you know, Facebook community groups. Oh, I've got this four-year-old. I don't know what to do with them. And so this is, you know, perfect for them because it just lays it all out for you. And, you know, also in the classroom, you know, it can be adapted to actual classrooms, you know, because the piano component is really quite flexible. You can exclude or include as much of it as you want, and you can focus on it as much as you want as well.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much, guys, for coming on the show. It's been great to unpack these two programs. Congratulations on what you've created. Can't wait to see how it all unfolds. And just a reminder to all of you listening, if you are interested in this ages 4 to 7 kind of category, or even 2 to 7, head over to advantagemusicacademy.com/teaching and grab that resource pack. And if you're the first 5, you get to hang out with Brock on a call. That's super, super cool. So go and check it out now. I can assure you that the quality of this is fantastic and well-researched, and you will just love watching the videos of Brock teaching these cute little kids. I think you've got a great job there, Brock, having fun with these kids every day. So,
oh, it's a dream. It's an absolute dream.
You can tell that you love it, though, because it just seems so natural. I'm sure you've obviously worked really hard over the years. You've honed that skill.
Oh, thank you.
And it just comes shining through in the videos. Thank you very much. I'll let you get on with your days. Appreciate you joining me today.
Thank you.
Lovely. Cheers. Thank you so much, Tim.
Hi everyone, I wanted to take a moment to let you know about an amazing community of music teachers ready to welcome you over at Top Music Pro. Top Music Pro is the global hub for music teachers looking to connect, learn, grow, and be challenged in both their teaching and studio businesses. Community members save time by accessing hundreds of step-by-step lesson plans, creative teaching frameworks, business guides, online courses, and workshops. We offer training in topics as diverse as music technique, lead sheets, website building, intermediate repertoire, group teaching, and special needs teaching. We also save you money through our extensive discounts, including those with Music Notes, Sheet Music Plus, Music Room, Office Depot, Tonebase, and many more. And if you like sheet music, all our members get a free book of studio licensed, beautifully engraved sheet music each and every month. As a valued podcast listener, you can check out the Top Music Pro community free for 14 days by heading to topmusicpro.com, clicking Join Now on our studio tier, and using the special coupon code IMTPOD23. That's all one word. So that's IMTPOD23. We can't wait to welcome you inside. Well, I hope today's episode has got you motivated and perhaps thinking about whether you could add some preschool and younger children to your studio. If that's been something that's perhaps been in the back of your mind, maybe this has given you the impetus to go, maybe I could try that out. I mean, there's no doubt that the benefits are serious and real. When you start children 3, 4, even 2 years, even 1 year before they might normally start, and give them those musicality skills and training in singing and oral discrimination and rhythm and beat and meter and harmony and all of those kinds of things, you will have more success with your students. There's absolutely no doubt. So make sure you do head over to their website, as we discussed, advantagemusicacademy.com/teaching, and try out some of those ideas that they've got. Over on the Guitar Podcast this week with Michael Gumley, we've got episode number 44. It's called Diaries of a University Music Professor, with Professor Padraig O'Kane. You can find that over at topmusic.co/guitar044, or just search for the Top Music Guitar Podcast on any of your podcast listing apps. Well, that's the end of the show this week. Hope you've enjoyed it. And next week, we're featuring a return guest who hasn't been with us since, I think it's about 2015, actually, the amazing Lynette Barney, who will be continuing our theme of group teaching, talking about some of the amazing things that she does with groups in her studio. I'm Tim Topham, and you've been listening to the Integrated Music Teaching Podcast. Can't wait to speak to you again this time next week. Bye-bye. How do you keep up to date with all the latest trends and research into music education? How do you connect with other teachers around the world and make sure your teaching stays fresh and relevant for students of all ages and stages, both now and into the future? I created our Top Music Pro membership to be the one-stop shop for music teaching resources, training, support, and community, and I'd love for you to come and join us inside. With over 40 comprehensive training courses, hundreds of teaching demonstrations and lesson plans, free monthly sheet music, discounts, and all the business and pedagogy support you could ever need, Top Music Pro is the community you've been looking for. If you're ready to level up your learning from the podcast and join thousands of other teachers in our global network, head over to topmusicpro.com today. If you enjoy this show and want to hear more of our work, be sure to subscribe to this podcast wherever you're listening today. For links and resources mentioned in this episode, visit us at topmusic.co/podcast or check out the show notes. I'm Tim Topham, and this is the Integrated Music Teaching Podcast, a production of Top Music. Thank you so much for listening. Enjoy your week ahead, and I'll catch you next time.